Once again, welcome. And I think I say this each time I come back from a long trip, but it is such a delight to come in here. And for some reason, I'm so surprised at how strong it is each time that I come back from a trip. And in particular, I think it's this feeling of appreciation of entering into this gathering that all of us are creating together when we come together on Monday night. And to me, it's a pretty cool gathering, or there's something really beautiful about it, namely that we come together, or we gather together as a way of honoring this intention, probably this like intention that all of us have, a like intention of the value of a spiritual path, or the value of a spiritual life. The value of looking more deeply into this moment and into our lives. But it's not only that, right? If it was only that, then we'd be melded into one. And so it's a gathering that has a like intention, but also really honors that all of us probably have a different perspective or a different view of what that spiritual path is, mm-hmm. and a different expression to it. So a gathering that honors that there's a difference in expression and understanding, and yet at the same time we come together. And both are really important, right? The quality of coming together, but coming together in a way that we feel like the way that we're on our spiritual path isn't being squelched, or we have to conform to something that actually doesn't really feel true to us. Because I'm sure you know what that feels like. And it's really not so helpful for the investigation that we're doing. So again, appreciation or gratitude. And that's what I'd like to speak to you about tonight, is this quality of gratitude. Probably a pretty good reason, right? It's that time of year. This week we have Thanksgiving, and usually the theme around that a lot of times is this quality of gratitude or gratefulness. And I want to speak about that quality in terms of our spiritual path, and to share with you some reflections upon gratitude so that you too can reflect on this quality of mind, which is really so beautiful. And I'd like to begin by situating gratitude within the Buddha's teaching that you find in early Buddhism. And you could say that gratitude is this quality of mind, like he would term it a wholesome state of mind, or I think even more aptly, a beautiful state of mind. And when we cultivate these beautiful states of mind, like gratitude or compassion or kindness, equanimity, mindfulness, concentration, it gives a kind of stability to the mind, and also a kind of flexibility and malleability that allows it to get deeper and deeper tastes of freedom within this activity of living and dying. And there's one teaching of the Buddha's that speaks to this quality of gratitude, which is this teaching around a precious human birth, which sometimes fits into the way we see the world and sometimes doesn't. Of course, for the Buddha, the precious human birth was situated within this context or this story of rebirth, and the story of a human birth being incredibly rare. And he gives this image of a blind sea turtle who comes up from the depths of the ocean only once every 100 years. And if someone were to toss what he calls a yolk, or basically a ring, that's just a little bit larger than the head of the turtle, the chances of that turtle popping its head through that ring in the vastness of the ocean would be more likely than to have the birth as a human being. Right? Which means this is a pretty rare thing. It's a precious life that we have. And even if you don't believe in rebirth, I think there's something powerful, don't you think, about that story? It really points to the preciousness of this life. It can be so fleeting too. And also just to the momentary experience that we have. I mean, just to think, Did you notice today? What a beautiful day it was today. A beautiful day on this fragile planet. What a wondrous thing to be here for it. To me, this teaching on a precious human birth really speaks to that. And even in other forms of Buddhism, like in Tibetan Buddhism, which is different than what we're doing here, like this place that we're sitting in, that's the first teaching that one reflects on. One does a practice usually of contemplating the four thoughts that turn the mind towards the spiritual path or towards the Dharma. And that first thought is a precious human birth. A story that I feel fits into this. I had a friend who was an avid kayaker, and he went kayaking with another friend of his. So there's two of them kayaking, and his friend was a little bit ahead of him, and it was an incredibly fast river, and his friend was able just to get out of the river just in time before running into this huge tree that had fallen down into the river. And yet, the guy I know actually didn't have time, because the way he was situated in the river, to get out before he came upon the tree. And what happened is his kayak came in at a glance and got trapped right kind of against the tree. And his friend was desperately trying to get out on the log on this tree to get him out, because I think most of you know, if his kayak goes under, usually with trees, they have what's called a strainer, you know, which means that there's branches underneath the tree that would trap him and basically kill him. And he said he remembers just holding on and holding on here as the current is starting to really pull at the kayak, trying to pull it under. And as his friend's coming out, and his friend is on the tree running out, and at that point he realizes that he can no longer hold on. His body was completely worn out at that time, and his muscles let go, and he went under. And luckily, he said it was a miracle. He popped up on the other side. There was no branches underneath, which is quite an amazing thing. And it was fascinating. He said it was the wildest thing to walk around. He lived in New York City after that experience. And he said it was kind of these two things. One is the fragility of being alive. Literally, what is it? 4 or 5 minutes under there, and he would have been gone. And yet, here he was, walking in the grocery store in a way that he might not have been. And not only the fragility, the deep gratitude for this activity of living, just the feeling of breathing, he said, started to have a new poignancy to it. The activity of sight, or the feeling of walking, or a breeze. And so you might hear in that the depth of gratitude that came from really this coming against his mortality. So gratitude for our lives. And sometimes death has a way of clarifying that for us. And sometimes it's, as I said, the simple things. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to share with you a poem that I feel exemplifies this quality again. It's a poem by the poet Jane Kenyon. And I want to give a little bit of background about her and when the poem was written, because I think it adds a certain poignancy to the poem. The name of the poem is Otherwise, and it was published in a book entitled Otherwise, and then I think Otherwise and the New and Selected Poems. But it was actually published after her death, because she had written the poem in the last remaining months of her life. What had happened is at the age of 46, she had been diagnosed with leukemia, and 15 months later, she died. And it was during that time that she wrote this. But not only that, her life was an interesting life in the sense that She had great struggle in her life. She struggled deeply with depression, and later it was diagnosed actually with as bipolar, but it was a kind where it was more on the depressive side than the manic side. And she actually writes beautifully about it, but you get to hear some of her struggle, and I think it gives. Please come in. There's some cushions over there, and you
Okay.
can. There's a place to sit over here.
And
But I feel like the poem is has a certain kind of poignancy given the struggle that's within it. It's not just this Pollyanna view of simple things and how wonderful they are. It's in the midst of how difficult life can be. Because I think all of you know that's what makes it so difficult to be grateful, is because this life of ours can be so difficult. And I want to share with you one of her descriptions. Of her struggles with depression. It's a wonderful poem entitled Having It Out with Melancholy. And she describes depression as being this unholy ghost. And so she talks about this unholy ghost. She says, "Unholy ghosts, you are certain to come again. Coarse, mean. You'll put your feet on the coffee table, lean back, and turn me into someone who can't take the trouble to speak. Someone who can't sleep, or who does nothing but sleep. Can't read or call for an appointment for help. There is nothing I can do against your coming. When I awake, I am still with thee." Some of you have maybe struggled with something like that, maybe can resonate with this a little bit, of this unholy ghost that can come and then turns her into someone, right? Who can't take the trouble to speak. Someone who can't sleep or does nothing but sleep. Can't read, call for an appointment for help. That struggle, that's difficulty. And yet, she writes this poem towards the end of her life entitled Otherwise. She begins, "I got out of bed on two strong legs. It might have been otherwise. I ate cereal, sweet milk, ripe, flawless peach. It might have been otherwise. I took the dog uphill to the birch wood. All morning I did the work I love. At noon I lay down with my mate. It might have been otherwise. We ate dinner together at a table with silver candlesticks. It might have been otherwise. I slept in a bed in a room with paintings on the walls and planned another day just like this day. But one day I know it will be otherwise." Such simple things. Do you hear her appreciation? Ripe, flawless peach. Taking the dog uphill to the birch wood and knowing that it might have been otherwise, that she might not have been able to do that. And what gives her that gratitude is that recognition that one day it will be otherwise. Gratitude. You might hear in this story I'm telling about Jane Kenyon and this poem, the kind of protection or balance that gratitude probably was giving her life. And maybe you've noticed that gratitude can really help us traverse the difficulties in our lives. And I think this is why the Buddha calls it one of these the highest protection, a kind of protection from the difficulties in our lives. it can make such a difference when you can say, not only I'm having a difficult day, but to say, I'm having a difficult day and I'm living a blessed life. It's not denying that there's difficulty, but it's really seeing a broader context. Gratitude can offer this broader context to hold difficulty. The other thing I appreciate about her poem is this gratefulness for the simple things. I think a wonderful place to really practice gratitude, which I'm sure many of you do, is around food. In Soto Zen, which is a sect of Zen Buddhism, they have a meal gatha or a meal chant that they do. And the way it begins, I want to share with you the beginning of it. Just the first sentence. First, 72 laborers brought us this food. We should know how it comes to us. Again, 72 laborers brought us this food. We should know how it comes to us. Let me explain this number 72 a little bit. 72 is traditionally in a Soto Zen monastery, there would be 72 different positions that the monks would hold. So it's acknowledging all the work that everyone's doing within the monastery to bring that food to you. And yet it also has a broader context, 72 being not only that, but on this metaphorical level of seeing all the laborers, that all the people that have gone into, even the birds, the sun, the earth, that bring you this food. So it's the sense of knowing how it comes to you, so there's this quality of gratitude for a simple meal. So much goes into it, and have you noticed how it can change a meal when you start with a quality of gratitude for what's there in front of you? And this points to a specific way that the Buddha was talking about gratitude, namely it being a skill that we hone. It's not something that simply pops up, but you might notice that more often you do it, the more we gain skill around it. And so for the Buddha, gratitude was very much linked with this quality of remembering the kindnesses done for you. So the word in Pali, the early scriptural language of Buddhism, is katanyu, which literally means to have a sense of what was done. So remembering. Can you remember the kindnesses that have been done to you, done for you? And more importantly, can you remember to acknowledge them? This is something that we might want to explore in the discussion period, because I think it can be really rich, is noticing where are the places where it's very easy for you to express gratitude around kindnesses that are done for you? And where are the difficult places? Who are the people that have shown you some modicum of kindness, yet it's difficult to express it? Have you noticed these two areas in your life? And I want to point out a lot of what the spiritual path is about is really remembering in different contexts. And this is remembering the kindnesses that were done for you. And then when we're practicing meditation, it's remembering to be present. It's remembering what's important to you in another context in terms of intention. So what are the things that get in the way of gratitude, that make gratitude difficult, that undermine it? And I want to point out that I think there's probably a whole host of things out there, but I want to mention one that you might be able to relate to, or you might see it work explicitly or in subtle ways. And it's this construct of seeing the world in terms of deserving or not deserving, which is really problematic on both sides in terms of gratitude. So if I feel like I deserve something, then I'm not going to be grateful for it. The place I can see this as especially is when I go, when I'm getting some kind of service out there or some kind of, or I go to a store or to a restaurant, and I have an expectation that this waiter or waitress or this cashier, that I deserve some kind of behavior from them. And when I feel like I deserve that from them, I'm not grateful for them at all. And it can really switch when I don't have that. Like what I notice is, for example, I might be in a huge store and I can't find what I'm looking for. Like I was just in Home Depot. I would have been in there for an hour, literally yesterday. It's amazing, right? Some weird small screw that I needed for a cabinet. And yet there was someone there. And I could say to myself, oh, that's their job, and I deserve this since I'm a customer. But what does that do? It undermines my feeling of gratitude. I actually felt really grateful for that person. And I thank them. Thank you for this. What a wonderful service that you just gave me. It's such a more genuine way of being with somebody. And then the opposite also can be just as undermining when I feel like I don't deserve something. Have you ever noticed this? If I have a feeling that I don't deserve something or I feel guilty about it or somebody's giving me too much, then it cuts down on my feeling of gratitude towards them. And because what's happened is I'm lost in this view of myself and I can't open up to the joy that they're getting by giving me something. And I want to point out this can be a big practice. I know it was a big practice for me. A lot of times when I'm lost in the sense of I don't deserve, there's a smallness. And there's a lack of capacity to really be grateful, to really show up when someone's offering me a kindness. And again, have you ever noticed this? Someone offers something to you, and instead of meeting them with gratitude, there's a shrinking away. And again, that's built on this construct of, I don't deserve this. Both are situated, I deserve this and I don't deserve this, around a self-centric view of the world that is incredibly confining. And I think they go hand in hand. If I'm believing I deserve this, then there's going to be the sense of not deserving this or that. And if I feel like I don't deserve this or that, there can be a sense of deserving and a lack of gratitude. And again, a lot of it's around how you see things, how you perceive the world around you. There's this a great quote from this comic strip, Ziggy. He says, you can complain because roses have thorns, or you can rejoice because thorns have roses. What's going to be your view? How are you going to frame that? Here's another example. This comes from a Tibetan teacher by the name of Adi Rinpoche, who tried to flee during the Chinese invasion in, was it 1959? Actually, he was unsuccessful at it and spent about 20 years in a Chinese prison. But he describes his attempt to flee into India. Interesting. I just want to share with you this paragraph from his biography or autobiography. He says, during the 2 years that I was on the run, so he's fleeing from the Chinese. And please remember, when he's fleeing, it is horrific in the sense of he's fleeing, and at the times he's seeing people being killed. So he's literally fleeing for his life in the midst of this fighting and this decimation of his culture and his people. So his life's on the line literally every day. He says, during the 2 years that I was on the run, fleeing from one place after another, from time to time, I would pass through an area where the early masters of the Kagyu lineage, so the early masters of the tradition that he was from, or other great masters of the past had stayed. High up in the mountains, I would sometimes visit retreat hermitages that were blessed by these great practitioners. Arriving at such places, I felt, okay, I'm being chased now, but so what? Let whatever happens happen. It was so wonderful to be able to visit such places. Striking, right? Here he is, literally running for his life, and he comes across this cave that some old practitioner was in, and he was just delighted by it and so grateful that he was in that area. He would have never been in that area if he was fleeing. That is the power of gratitude. And do you hear in that how it probably helped him navigate the danger? Okay, so for the sit tonight, what we'll do, we'll do something a little bit different, which is at the beginning of the sit, just for a few minutes, I'm going to invite you to just reflect on what you're grateful for. It could be the gratitude of being here and sitting. It could be the gratitude of breathing. Just to cultivate gratitude and to reflect on it. So reflect is thinking about it just for a few minutes. So we'll begin to sit, and then in about 3 minutes I'll ring the bell, and at that time it's to let go of those thoughts and then to begin with the sitting meditation. And this kind of comes in a context. Some meditation teachers will talk about actually to do just a little bit of reflection at the beginning of a meditation sit, which can be really helpful.